So can our politicians finally crack dealing with the past? It's viewed as the biggest challenge before them at the Haas talks. The next 7 to 10 days are being described as crucial. Last night, there was a stark warning from the Alliance MP, Naomi Long. She says Northern Ireland's past may never be resolved if politicians fail to reach agreement on how to deal with it now.
I'm realistic about this. I think in this process there have been a series of important moments. I think that this is an important moment for Northern Ireland. I think if we can do this in the next week to 10 days, we can transform the context in which we have conversations about a whole series of issues in Northern Ireland. If we get it wrong, we may never get another opportunity to address these issues, and it's hugely important that we do.
Now, yesterday on the Nolan programme, Sammy Wilson said the DUP would support limited immunity for people involved in trouble-related crime if requested by victims. That is seen by some as very significant.
If some of those who are hurting say that this is the only way that we believe we can get the information which will deal with the hurt which we have experienced, then I think it will be very difficult for anyone to say, well, we're going to deny you that. But what I would want to do, of course, is to, for people who ask for that, to spell out all of the implications which there are and follow from that. But at the end of the day, if that's what some of those, and not all of them, not all people will want that, and that's why we've been very specific about this particular issue. Not all of the people who have been affected will be prepared to sign up to that. So this should not be something which is a blanket arrangement, but only in those very specific circumstances would we, and I've got to say, at least in that from my own part, reluctantly sign up to such an arrangement.
So if they're prepared to live with it, you would reluctantly live with it?
Yes, because I don't have to live with the hurt that they have experienced. And therefore, why would I, if there's a route which they're prepared to live with, to deal with the hurt they've had, why would I stand in the way of that?
Well, the TV leader, Jim Allister, listening to that. What are your thoughts around this, Jim?
Well, I must say, I think that's a very misguided view. I would have three reasons for being opposed to immunity, which is amnesty by another name. The first one is that it totally corrupts and is a perversion of our criminal justice system, which is based on the fact that if you commit a crime, there is no limitation period whereby the law can catch up with you, that you live forever under the threat that the long arm of the law may catch up with you and you may have to pay for your crime. And now, of course, immunity, it removes that threat, and therefore it brings me to my second reason. It's a win for the terrorist. The person who's succeeding out of this is the terrorist. He's the one who's gaining. What's the victim gaining? Well, a form...
Information.
A version of the truth. Are you to know it's the truth? Because the terrorist tells you it's the truth. Really? Is that the point we've got to? Is that all we think of victims, that we say to them, you can't have justice, but you can have what the terrorist tells you is the truth? And the third reason why I think it is utterly misguided and wrong is that it would be excessively divisive amongst victims. Take a situation, and this is replicated many times over. Someone is murdered, but they have two brothers, let's say. One thinks they would settle for the terrorist truth, and the other thinks they would settle only for justice. How do you sort that situation? Take a situation where you have a double murder. One family says, we'll settle for the terrorist truth. The other family says, no, we want to hold on to the hope that happened in the John Proctor case, that one day someone will be made amenable through the law. How do you settle that situation? I think it would be hopelessly divisive among victims, and I think it is utterly misguided.
And there are lots of what-ifs in there, Jim, and fair enough, and you make fair points. But what about a different situation where there is no disagreement, that there is only one family and the whole family for themselves want to give immunity because they want to take the risk of getting the information that they otherwise will not get? And there are no other buts, whats, what ifs. What if that is the situation? Are you saying you think you should be able to prevent that from happening?
I'm saying that society should have such respect for the criminal justice system that it should not be preferred to corrupt and perverted. We've done enough of that in Northern Ireland through the early release scheme and everything else. I think we do have to draw a line and say, sorry, there is a point where for the sanctity, such as it now remains of the criminal justice system, we cannot compromise that any further. Victims don't decide the sentences in any criminal case, can they, in a proper criminal justice system, decide the outcome in terms of whether someone should be prosecuted.
Although, Jim, do you know that the reality is that in the vast majority of cases, prosecution is highly unlikely, given the passage of time?
I know that, and people love to say that, and people who love to say that often are anxious there shouldn't be prosecutions. But we saw just a couple of weeks ago, in the case of John Proctor, that after 30 years you can have justice, a form of justice, because of DNA. We heard yesterday of new DNA processes, DNA 17, which is going to open up further opportunities. The long arm of the law should never give up in terms of pursuing justice. That's the fundamental.
So the HET looked at 1,800 cases and there have been only 3 prosecutions. Now, what does that tell you?
Well, it tells me something either about the efficacy of the HET inquiries, or it tells me that, of course, with the passage of time, things are very difficult and that exhibits have not been retained the way they should have been retained to be available for DNA and all of that. But for any family, if there is hope that at the end of a process, like in the Proctor case, there could be a conviction, then that for them, I believe, is something we're not entitled to take away from them. I think immunity and amnesty does all that. It hands another victory to the terrorists. You know, look at this situation. You have an innocent victim, you have the perpetrator. And we're going to say to the perpetrator, all you have to do to wipe the slate clean is tell us your version of the truth. How we're ever to know it's the truth, I don't know. And we say to the victim, you should be very thankful and happy for that. I don't think so.
Well, the commentator and former Sinn Féin director of publicity, Danny Morrison, with us this morning. Morning to you, Danny.
Good morning, Steve.
You're reported as saying that you think that there are very few IRA members would actually come forward to tell what they know, even under this sort of immunity. Is that correct?
No, I said that I don't see a queue of IRA people, loyalist paramilitaries, RUC, UDR, British Army people coming forward to reveal what they were involved in. So my comment was in relation to everyone you just said there. Reporting on the HET, prosecution is highly unlikely. That begs the question, why would people come forward? And although Jim Allister just said there that this would hand a victory to the terrorists, many in the Republican community would think that it was handing a victory to the British government, which still hadn't answered its past and its involvement in the dirty war. I'm not privy to the Haas talks. I do wish them well, but I am very sceptical about whether they will reach an agreement about how to deal with the past.
And what is your view around immunity and the proposal of limited immunity, as the DUP have said they will now sign up to?
Well, I hate to queer the pitch, but I think there's a huge disconnect between this discussion and the likelihood of all of these former combatants queuing up. Does anybody know how many people are going to come forward? Has anybody tested that? I just don't see it happening.
Why?
I think that there are other means. For example, there's a certain category of killings throughout the conflict here. I think if the IRA falsely accused someone or some of its victims of being in the UDR or in the UVF and that they weren't, or they accused someone of being an informer and they weren't, I think that they have they can resolve that. Similarly, you know, if the British Army falsely accused people of throwing nail bombs or being snipers and they weren't, that can be corrected.
But Danny, do you not think there would be hordes of people with a conscience who know the pain and trauma that they're continuing to inflict on innocent victims who are living their lives, wanting answers, wanting to know what happened to their loved ones, wanting to know who was responsible? And you don't think that there would at least be a significant amount of people who can't sleep in their bed at night knowing that they killed or maimed someone and that they can at least put some of the pain to bed?
Well, I would like to think that people who fall in that category had already done something about it. out of sympathy and compassion for the families.
Not if they're going to be going to jail and prosecuted. But clearly they won't.
Well, first of all, I doubt very much if people will trust the system that, you know, there will be no prosecutions. I mean, earlier this year, a Donegal man called John Downey, who had been given assurances by the NIO in 2007 that he was not wanted for anything, and having gone in and out of England for about 6 years, was arrested and charged with the Hyde Park bombings from 31 years ago. And this was, you know, he was supposed to have been given an assurance. I think that people are too suspicious. And also, I need to know the detail. Like, for example, if someone says, right, we want to know why you killed my husband, my brother, regardless of what side they come from, after they answer that question, are they then going to be required to say, who drove the car? What house did you leave from? It becomes very difficult then, because very few people are going to start incriminating others. And if they do, think of the problems that's going to give them and their families and where they live. So it is really complex. And also, not all of the families want the same things.
Jim Alistair? Jim Alistair has dropped out. Thomas is on the line. Morning to you, Thomas.
Good morning, Stephen.
What are your thoughts?
When are you, Stephen, and the BBC going to do a full day's programming on the living instead of the dead? Education, jobs, health. The past is past. We can never change it. And we spend far too much time worrying about the dead when we should be focusing. Like, my daughter was born in the year of peace, 1998. And in 2000, I had to make her sit a Protestant 11 plus and a Catholic 11 plus. It's all sectarian. It's all about the past. Now I'm waiting on my grandson, and he will probably be subjected to the same nonsense in education. We have turned our children into sectarian footballs. What about a debate on that? And when are we going to fix it? And when are we going to get the health service fixed?
Do you know what, Thomas? This is all fair comment from you on us. Why are we talking about the past and why are we talking about the dead? Except there's one reality that you're forgetting. We're not just talking about the dead. We are talking here about victims and their families who are very much still alive. So, you know, some victims paralysed, some victims with very serious psychological trauma, some victims' families, daughters, sons, mums, dads, looking at an empty bedroom because someone has been murdered. And are they not entitled to be part of the discussion, or do you just want to put a line under it, wipe them out of history and say we don't care about you anymore? Is that seriously what you're suggesting the BBC does?
Not at all. But you need to focus, you need to get the balance right. There is a large percentage of those people that suffer their pain and their anguish and dignity, and they just deter, and it's always going to be there. There are other people who go to the ends of the earth and get a £440 million inquiry, and they're still not happy. And so quite a large percentage are willing to put it behind them. But let me tell you, 100% of children in schools need good education. 100% of people who go to hospitals need good health care.
It's not an either-or, is it? It's not an either-or. Move on. What an easy thing to just say, move on. So you try telling that to someone that's still getting flashbacks from some masked man getting into their home or someone killing their mum or dad. You tell them to move on, Thomas.
They have to move on because they owe it to themselves and they owe it to the people that died in the Troubles to move on. We cannot continually live in the past, flags, parades. We're at a time warp, Stephen, and the BBC, I think, too often feeds into it just to get the ratings, my friend.
Jim Alistair?
Well, I don't think that you can put a price in terms of time or money on justice. I think every citizen is entitled to seek and to obtain justice. And yes, in this society, it has seemed from time to time that justice, obtaining justice for some is more important than others. But there has to be a common base that the citizen who has been wronged by being made a victim by someone in pursuit of a criminal act has the right to see the perpetrator brought to justice. And once you start tinkering with that, and indeed therein is part of the problem because we have tinkered with that. Once you start tinkering with that, then it is a slippery slope of which immunity is the next dimension.
The Alliance MP, Naomi Long, listening to this this morning. Well, morning, Naomi.
Good morning, Steve.
And you've just heard Jim Allister saying once you tinker with pursuing perpetrators, with bringing them to justice, that is the slippery slope. He is saying we've already done it and now we're paying the consequences.
Well, maybe, Stephen, if I could start by responding to the point that Thomas made. Because Thomas is right. We do need to focus on the future. And the reason that we're spending time at the moment with Richard Haass discussing flags, discussing parades, discussing how we deal with the past is because we want to be able to unlock those issues so that we can focus our energy and our attention on building a better and more stable future. I'm future-focused. That's what I want to see, a better Northern Ireland going forward. But we can't simply bury these problems underground because they erupt in either violence or in hurt or in stress or in pain. So we've got to find ways of dealing with our past and dealing with these sensitive issues in a managed way that will actually start to bring resolution and reconciliation. That frees us to have a different future, and that's where the focus has got to be, Stephen. I understand what Jim is saying, but Jim is playing fast and loose, actually, with language around this. Limited immunity from prosecution is not, as he stated, wiping the slate clean or an amnesty. Well, I think all of the parties, when the amnesty issue was raised, said that that was not the case, nor is anyone arguing. Jim, you have had quite a long time to put your point. I am now responding to it. And if you would have the courtesy to listen, it would be helpful to the discussion, because these are sensitive and complex issues. Limited immunity does not apply to an individual. Limited immunity applies to information given by that individual. It doesn't rule out prosecution of that individual if other evidence, for example, comes forward that could be used to convict. It simply means that the evidence that they would present, the truth that they would give to the victim, cannot be used against them. And that is a very different concept to, for example, the one floated by John Larkin, which was that there would be no prosecutions for any offences pre-1998, something that I think would be an utter corruption of the justice system. But we have, on other occasions, to serve a greater good, given limited immunity from prosecution. It isn't an unusual thing in international law, and it would not be an unusual thing in our circumstances. And it would only, and I stress only, be considered where families chose that route. It's not something that should be foisted on them, and it's certainly not something that should be seen as an alternative to justice that people
okay.
are then removed.
Okay, well, let's let Jim Allister respond to that. And it's an important clarification from Naomi Long this morning, Jim, that what she's saying is that a perpetrator would not be given immunity for what they don't tell us, or the victim, they would simply be giving limited immunity for the information that they do give.
Well, let's consider the practicalities of that. So what Naomi is saying is that someone would come in and say, I killed your brother. Immediately, people would want to know questions like, well, who was with you? Who decided to do this? Where was the car picked up? What weapons were used? Where did the weapons go? Now, Naomi says that all you're giving is limited immunity, but the consequence of limited immunity is that none of those questions would be answered, because in the answering of them, they would open up investigative leads, which, in Naomi says, could ultimately be used against them. So self-evidently, they would not facilitate the opening up of those leads. So the real consequence is that you create a situation of total dissatisfaction for the victim, where all they hear is that someone murdered their brother, their uncle, whatever, but no explanation, no detail, no truth, which, of course, is what they're seeking. So, you know, the more one hears about this, the less viable a proposition it is.
Naomi?
Well, I don't agree with Jim, because I think there, first of all, has to be a very honest conversation. You've already referenced, Stephen, the lack of opportunity that people have and the decrease in opportunity people have to pursue justice. There will be certain circumstances in which that will be possible, and I would welcome that. But there will be, for many people, neither truth nor justice at the end of the of their time on this earth. That is a tragic reality and a painful reality, but it is a reality, and that's the starting point we're in. We need to look at how we serve. We need to serve that constituency better than we currently do, with fragmented service provision to them, with a plethora of different investigative tools, and with no alternatives to be explored. And what we are trying to do in terms of putting this forward and considering it is look at a series of options that can form a comprehensive process. Justice will be part of that process. Truth will be part of that process. Storytelling will be part of that process. Recognition will be part of that process. And I believe that reconciliation must also be part of that process.
Danny, you wanted to ask a question. Go ahead.
Yes. I mean, if everyone seems to be agreed, and I actually tend to agree with what Jim Arthur just said a few moments ago, but if everyone is agreed that it's highly unlikely that former combatants, be they in the RUC or former UDR British soldiers or the IRA or UVF, are going to be charged, then what would be the incentive for them, especially given that if it was one of compassion, that they could actually do that privately, anonymously, currently?
Naomi?
Well, I think there are a couple of things. I mean, if Danny and his colleagues and so on really believe that reconciliation is important, and certainly Sinn Féin have been saying that for them it is important, and if they really mean that to be the case, then they will surely encourage people to come forward and cooperate with that process. So that's why it's important that politicians are discussing these issues and looking at how that's going to work. The other issue is that if someone were to share that information out of compassion privately, that information could immediately be used to convict them. So it's wrong to say that they could do that privately, because it wouldn't work. So the limit.
Well, they did it anonymously.
But anonymously wouldn't necessarily deal with the reconciliation issue. So there is more at stake than simply that. And the limited immunity may be sufficient. And bear in mind when we say, how much truth will people give? And these are genuine issues. We're not saying that any process we come up with and any discussion that we have around this will come up with a perfect process. There is no perfect process. At the end of any comprehensive process, there will still be victims who are let down, who never know the truth and who never have justice. What we are trying to do, Stephen, is find a better process that will better serve more of that community. And it can't only, you're quite right, it cannot only be about the deceased. It is also about the living, those who live with the loss and those who live with the disability.
Naomi, just to be clear, this limited immunity, it would apply to those crimes committed pre-Good Friday Agreement, pre-98, would it?
Well, that's not a discussion that I want to get into.
Or up to right now.
Let me explain why
I'm asking the question, first of all.
And that's the context in which I am considering it, Stephen, but I can't get into a discussion about what other people are doing.
Well, let me explain why I'm asking the question. Should the dissidents be given limited immunity?
Well, as I said, my context for this is that we do this for pre-1998, that we deal with troubles-related violence and troubles-related violence only.
But wouldn't we offer it to the dissidents?
Because I think we are not ruling out justice, and that's also the other important part that the dissidents need to pay attention to, that we are not talking about not pursuing justice in these cases. We are simply saying that if victims choose, and this is crucial, Stephen, because I have spoken to a wide range of victims, some of whom would not be interested in any process at all, some of whom want to pursue justice, and want to pursue justice until they have completely exhausted that and beyond. And others who say that they, at this point, feel that they don't feel justice will be done, but they have questions that they would want to have answered that might bring them some peace. Now, I don't think it is the job of politicians to tell victims how they should feel or what they should do. It is our job to try to respond in a way that is sensitive to the needs and the varied needs of victims, and to try to facilitate a process. It will not be perfect. It will not answer everyone's problems. I accept that. But what we have now is also imperfect, and we need to find ways of trying to improve it to address these issues.